Tanya Toten, and even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, I you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, I you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded because it compromises, develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies. And from these proceed debts and taxes, known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. No nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of a continual warfare. James Madison. Good evening and welcome to something very unusual. A live program on a Friday night. It has been many months since I've done one. Many, many months. It's not been in me physically. It's not been in me emotionally. And yet, what we have begun to face this week, more so than anything else under the idiocy of this damned Biden regime, as it were, is absolutely sickening. And emotionally, I can't tell you what it's raised within me. Understand, my friends, that as long as America's politicians continue to involve us in wars that bankrupt this nation, jeopardize our servicemen and women, increase the chances of terrorism and blowback domestically, and push the nation that much closer to eventual collapse, we the people will find ourselves in a perpetual state of tyranny. It's time for the U.S. government to stop policing the globe. It's time, as I mentioned last night, that we stop sticking our nose into every other damn person and country's business. And now this latest crisis, America's part in the showdown between Russia and the Ukraine, has conveniently followed on the heels of a long line of other crises, manufactured or otherwise, which have occurred like clockwork in order to keep Americans distracted, deluded, amused, and insulated from the government's steady encroachments on our freedoms. And so it continues in its Orwellian fashion. 2 years after COVID-19 shifted the world into a state of global authoritarianism, just as the people's tolerance for heavy-handed mandate seems to have finally worn thin, we're being prepped for the next distraction. and the next drain upon our economy. And yet policing the globe and waging endless wars abroad isn't making America or the rest of the world one damn bit safer. Certainly not making America great again. And it's undeniably digging the U.S. deeper into debt. Or possibly our graves. Indeed, you see, even if we were to put an end to all the government's military meddling and bring all of the troops home today, it would take decades to pay down the price of these wars, get the government's creditors off our backs. But you see, war has become a huge money-making venture, and the U.S. government, with its vast military empire, is one of the best buyers and sellers. And what most Americans, brainwashed into believing that patriotism means supporting the war machine, what these Americans fail to recognize is that these ongoing wars have little to do with keeping the country safe and everything to do with propping up a military-industrial complex that continues to dominate and dictate and shape almost every aspect of our lives. Consider this. We are a military culture engaged in continuous warfare. We've been a nation at war for most of our existence. We're a nation that makes a living from killing through defense contracts, weapons manufacturing, and endless wars. And we're also being fed a steady diet of violence through our entertainment, our news, our politics. And all of the military equipment featured in blockbuster movies is provided, at taxpayer expense, I might add, in exchange for carefully placed promotional spots. You know, back when I was a kid growing up in the 50s, almost every classic sci-fi movie ended with the heroic American military saving the day. Oh, some of you remember some of these films. Maybe it was the battle tanks in Invaders from Mars in 1953, or military roadblocks in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1956. But what I and most didn't know then as a schoolboy was the extent to which the Pentagon was paying to be cast as America's savior. And by the time my own kids were growing up, it was Jerry Bruckheimer's blockbuster film Top Gun, created with Pentagon assistance and equipment, which boosted civic pride in the military. And now, my friends, it's my grandchildren's turn to be awed and overwhelmed by child-focused military propaganda. Don't even get me started on the war propaganda churned out by the toy makers. Even reality television shows have gotten in on the gig. You know, the Pentagon's entertainment office helping to sell war to the American public. It's been estimated that the U.S. military intelligence agencies, including the NSA, have influenced over 1,800 movies and television shows. Of course, now there's the growing number of video games, a number of which are engineered by or created for the military. Oh no, they've accustomed their players to interactive war play through military simulations and first-person shooter scenarios. You see, this is how you acclimate a population to war. This is how you cultivate loyalty to a war machine. This is how, to borrow from the subtitle of the 1964 film Dr. Strangelove, you teach a nation to stop worrying and love the bomb. As journalist David Sirota writes for Salon magazine, collusion between the military and Hollywood, including allowing Pentagon officials to line edit scripts, is once again on the rise. New television programs and movies slated to celebrate the Navy SEALs. Major Hollywood directors remain more than happy to ideologically slant their films in precisely the pro-war, pro-militarist direction that the Pentagon demands in exchange for taxpayers' subsidized access to military hardware. My friends, why is the Pentagon and the CIA and the government at large so focused on using Hollywood as a propaganda machine? Well, to those who profit from war, it is, as Sirota recognizes, a product to be sold by a pop culture products that sanitize war and, in the process, boost recruitment numbers. All at a time when more and more Americans are questioning the fundamental tenets of militarism, i.e. budget-busting defense expenditures, never-ending wars and occupations, etc. ad nauseum. Now, military officials are desperate to turn the public opinion tide back in a pro-militaristic direction. And they know pop culture is the most effective tool to achieve that goal. And the media. The media, eager to score higher ratings, has been equally complicit in making real war more palatable to the public by packaging it as television friendly. That's what Professor Roger Stahl refers to as the representation of a clean war, a war without victims, without bodies, without suffering. Stahl states that dehumanized destruction by extracting all human imagery from target areas. The language used to describe the clean war is as antiseptic as the pictures, bombings, or airstrikes. A future bomb site is a target of opportunity. Unarmed areas are soft targets. Civilians are collateral damage. Oh, that's what we are. Oh, no, I thought that's what the COVID vaccines were all about. Collateral damage. Oh, that's another story. Destruction, of course, is also always known as surgical. And by and large, the clean war wiped the humanity of civilians from the screen. You see, create conditions by which war appears short, abstract, sanitized, and even aesthetically beautiful. Minimize any sense of death of soldiers or civilians. And this, my friends, is how we sell war to a populace that may have grown weary of endless wars. Sanitize the war coverage of anything graphic or discomfiting, which is present a clean war. Gloss over the actual numbers of soldiers and civilians killed. That's the human cost. Cast the business of killing humans in a more abstract, palatable fashion, like a hunt. Demonize one's opponents. Make the weapons of war a source of wonder and delight. This obsession with weapons of war has a name. Techno-fetishism. Weapons appear to take on a magical aura. They become centerpieces in a cult of worship. And apart from gazing at the majesty of these bombs, we were also invited to step inside these high-tech machines, take them for a spin. Or if we have the means, we can purchase one of the military vehicles on the consumer market. Not only are we invited to fantasize about being in the driver's seat, we're routinely invited to peer through the crosshairs as well. And these repeated modes of imaging war cultivate new modes of perception, new relationships to the tools of state violence. In other words, my friends, we become accustomed to seeing through the machines of war. And yet, in order to sell war, you've got to feed the public's appetite for entertainment, don't you? And so not satisfied with peddling its war propaganda through Hollywood, reality television shows and embedded journalists whose reports came across as glorified promotional ads for the military. The Pentagon has also turned to sports to further advance its agenda. Oh, yes, tying the symbols of sports with the symbols of war. And of course, our military has been firmly entrenched in the nation's sports spectacles ever since. They've co-opted football, basketball, even NASCAR. This is how you sustain the nation's appetite for war. No wonder entertainment violence is the hottest selling ticket at the box office. As Professor Henry Giroux pointed out, popular culture not only trades in violence as entertainment, but also it delivers violence to a society addicted to a pleasure principle, steeped in graphic and extreme images of human suffering, mayhem, and torture. No wonder the damn government continues to whet the nation's appetite for violence and war through paid propaganda programs, all seeded throughout sports entertainment, Hollywood blockbusters, video games, all what Stahl refers to as a militainment. That's a good word. Militainment. All which glorify the military, serve as recruiting tools for America's expanding military empire. Don't forget, which is all multisexual now, of course. No wonder Americans from a very young age are being groomed to enlist as foot soldiers, even virtual ones, in America's army. And coincidentally, that's also the name of a first-person shooter video game produced by the military, America's Army. Explorer Scouts, for example, they're one of the most popular recruiting tools for the military and its civilian counterparts, law enforcement, Border Patrol, the FBI. Explorer Scouts? No wonder the United States is the number one consumer, exporter, perpetrator of violence and violent weapons in the world. Come on, seriously. America spends more money on war than the combined military budgets of China, Russia, United Kingdom, Japan, France, Saudi Arabia, India, Germany, Italy, and Brazil. America, my friends, polices the globe. 800 military bases and troops stationed around the world in 160 countries. Moreover, the war hawks have turned the American homeland into a quasi-battlefield with military gear, weapons, and tactics. And in turn, domestic police forces have become roving extensions of the military and, in effect, a standing army. We are dealing with a sophisticated, far-reaching war machine that has woven itself into the very fabric of this nation. And clearly, our national priorities are in desperate need of an overhaul. You know, eventually all military empires fall and fail by spreading themselves too thin, spending themselves to death. It happened in Rome, at the height of its power. Even the mighty Roman Empire could not stare down a collapsing economy and a burgeoning military. And these are stories that I've told for a very, very long time. You could go to Sierra Madre, precious metals. No, I'm not getting into a gold and silver pitch. Go to Sierra Madre, precious metals. And up under the search engine, just type in the words Roman Empire. See what pops up. You might be able to do the same thing under federalobserver.com. I published the stories about the Roman Empire so many times in all the years I've been on the air and with my websites. It is unbelievable. As far as Rome is concerned, prolonged periods of war and false economic prosperity largely led to its demise, and it's happening all over again. Allow me a moment to share, as I do fairly often, these words from FederalObserver.com. The phrase, the fall of America, suggests some cataclysmic event ended the American empire, which is stretched from Maine to California and Florida to Washington. But at the end, there was no straining at the gates, no barbarian horde that dispatched the empire in one fell swoop. Rather, the empire fell slowly as a result of challenges from within and without, and changing over the course of hundreds of years until its form was unrecognizable. Do you think I wrote that? I took those words from one of the Roman stories, one of the great books about the fall of the Roman Empire, and retitled it The Fall of America. I changed just a few words, my friends. Do you get it, Jack? For the American empire, with its endless wars waged by U.S. military service people who have been reduced to little more than guns for hire, outsourced, stretched too thin, deployed to far-flung places to police the globe, is approaching a breaking point. And our government is destabilizing this economy, destroying the national infrastructure through neglect and a lack of resources, turning taxpayer dollars, our money, into blood money, with its endless wars and drone strikes and mounting death tolls. This is exactly the scenario President Dwight D. Eisenhower warned against when he cautioned the citizenry not to let the profit-driven war machine endanger our liberties or democratic process. And Eisenhower, who served as supreme commander of the Allied forces in Europe during World War II, was alarmed by the rise of the profit-driven war machine that, in order to perpetuate itself, would have to keep waging more war. And yet, as Eisenhower recognized, the consequences of allowing the military-industrial complex to wage war, exhaust our resources, and dictate our national priorities were beyond grave. And he stated thusly, that every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired, signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. And the cost of one modern heavy bomber is this: a modern brick school in more than 30 cities. It is two electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It is two fine, fully equipped hospitals. It is some 50 miles of concrete highway. We pay for a single fighter with a 500,000 bushels of wheat. We pay for a single destroyer with new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people. This, I repeat, is the best way of life to be found on the road the world has been taking. This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. But the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron. My friends, if I'm not mistaken, that is from a lecture that Eisenhower gave in 1959, shortly before turning over his office to JFK. We have failed to heed Eisenhower's warning. For the illicit merger of the armaments industry and the government that Eisenhower warned against has come to represent perhaps the greatest threat to this nation today. What we have is a confluence of factors and influences that go far beyond mere comparisons to Rome. It is a union of Orwell's 1984 with its shadowy totalitarian government. In other words, fascism, the union of government, corporate powers, and a total surveillance state with a military empire extended throughout the world. This is how tyranny rises, my friends. This is how freedom falls. The growth of and reliance on militarism is the solution for our problems, both domestically and abroad, bodes ill. But the constitutional principles which form the basis of the American experiment in freedom. And as Aldous Huxley warned, liberty cannot flourish in a country that is permanently on a war footing, or even a near war footing. Permanent crisis justifies permanent control of everybody and everything by the agencies of the central government. Aldous Huxley? You don't know who that is? You better look it up, people. It matters not. What is said is said. After last night's program, a number of issues came to pass, and it just kept going and going and going. An interesting piece that I came across late last night and I chose to publish today, and I've titled it, Could This Be Among the Reasons Why? And it was a large photograph of the Ukraine and around at the countries of the Russian Federation, Belarus, Poland. And a huge map of the Ukraine. And the thing that shocked me is the title of the image, U.S. Biolabs in Ukraine. Whoa, wait a minute, what? U.S. Biolabs in Ukraine? And there are images of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 existing biolabs in Ukraine with possibly two others. These are exclusive, financed at the expense of the U.S. Department of Defense. The laboratories are located in Odessa, Vinnytsia, Uzhgorod, Lviv. There's three of them there, three in Kiev. Kherson, Ternopil, and near Crimea and Luhansk, with two other possible locations in Kharkiv and Mykolaiv. Are these some of the real reasons? My granddaughter got out of school today when I picked her up and made the comment that Dotto, Putin, and Joey were on the phone together for an hour today and apparently did not go well. Gee, surprise, surprise. Joey kept tripping over his tongue, trying to urinate, I'm sure. One of the other posts I put up late last night, and there were a lot of comments about, this is bogus, it's bogus, it's bogus. The live camera from Ukraine, in Kiev. It's still up there. If you should care to watch. Could be interesting. There were points in time last night that I could see bombs going off. It's unbelievable. Simply unbelievable, my friends. What we are facing in this world today. Here we go again. As I closed, I believe, last night's program, I gave you a quote of Albert Einstein. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And certainly this becomes much of a continuation of our commentary thus far tonight, because we do keep doing the same things over and over again. Or maybe we don't expect any difference. Maybe we just don't care. Maybe we're so ignorant that we've been guided and stroked and jerked off about every possible direction in this nation. Joey and his son with their massive investments in Ukraine and the blaming of Trump for all this, that, and the other thing. I'm sick and tired of it all. Maybe in some respects it's been too good for too long. Maybe the beginning of COVID was the beginning of the end. I don't know. But you see, we've all grown complacent, lazy, fat, societally and physically. It's how we treat the remains of what we once had. Today's definitions of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are a far cry different from the original concept. The analogy here is that we are constantly losing, but not weight. We're losing our culture. I'm not talking about that experimental stuff growing in a petri dish or your unattended refrigerator, where there was once unity and a sense of community. And friends, we have fierce individualists, clannish, hyphenated nationalists. We're fractured into hundreds of segregated identity groups, each with individual goals and politics, all vying for the spotlight and their rights. We've bartered our American pride for a false sense of security and self. The new American mantra is, "What's in it for me?" We've lost sight of our original focus. Better place for everyone, not just a few. Certainly not just for me. For you see, the intriguing idea is that having more together allows the individual to have more seems to elude almost everyone today. We're so damn greedy that we can't figure out that when this country wins, the individual wins. But when only the individual wins, the country loses big time. Why is it so difficult to understand? Why is it so incomprehensible? Are we that self-centered in this nation? Have we grown to be that way? I'm afraid we have. Yeah, we are self-centered. We allow our country to drift closer to oblivion each and every day. This nation, our nation, no longer, well, maybe it's no longer our nation. Maybe it is just this nation. But it no longer resembles what it was but 50 years ago. Certainly 100 years before that, and even 100 years before that. We have yet to figure out that if we want to act and thrive as a community or live as narcissistic individuals, I mean, I guess we could be both. But that takes compromise to ensure that the needs of the individual are the same as those of the group, and that neither takes precedence or priority over the other. But compromise is an entirely foreign concept for most. I mean, the idea that I can't have everything I want is just inconceivable. In this nation, we have no perception of the difference between wants and needs. Not anymore, we don't. And the downside is what we're surviving today. A society comprised of a minority of makers and a majority of takers. I consider this a new definition for supply and demand. We've mistaken freedom for carte blanche and laissez-faire. We've conveniently overlooked that liberty and freedom imply... No, that's not the right word. They don't imply, they require. Liberty and freedom require responsibility. We'd much rather sit back and have a bloated government that gives us everything and controls our every move than be self-sufficient and self-directed. Think about what we've witnessed this year. The companies that can't hire anybody. Grocery stores. Home Depot can't hire. Lowe's can't hire. JCPenney's. Sears is done. They're dead. Jack in the Box. I drove through Jack in the Box this morning. They only had two people working in that place, and the front door was closed again. They're strictly doing drive the door delivery at the window. But why? Because the unemployment benefits that have been handed out by the government have been so extensive this year. All the free COVID money that we're not even going to get taxed for. But that doesn't matter because they're jacking up the price of gasoline here in Arizona. Hit $4 a gallon today. Yeah. We'd rather have that bloated government that gives us everything. And yet when that same system steps in to service our expectations, we immediately scream about our loss of freedom and liberty and my rights. You know, we tend to ignore the reminders of the early days of America before the first revolution, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Those memories are nothing more than caricatures today, artfully embellished representations of a conflict that we've only read about. They're merely faded, quaint moments from our past that once aroused our patriotism. Now they're nothing but tripping points, irrelevant passages in memoirs that no one reads. And the feelings stirred by and associated with those grand tableaus and paintings and memorials and statues are nowhere to be found. Because they've either been torn down or are being torn down or discarded with those mementos, those memories. No, the vocal minority judge them hurtful reminders of a fabled past built upon lies and propaganda and media programming. Much of it was purposefully distorted to fit the manufactured exclusionary and racially biased narrative. And so we've allowed the minority to dictate to an entire country. We have allowed the minority to dictate to this entire nation. This is the price of having too much of everything and misunderstanding freedom and never saying no. They seceded from the Union. And they trashed it as they pulled away. And their goal was to punish everyone for their beliefs in propaganda, false narratives, and lies. But no one matters but me. Look, we've forgotten what it is to feel pride and honor, pride in being American, pride to be part of the greatest nation on earth. But then you see we become a laughingstock and we become the butt of the world's jokes. Our leader's a clown. Our entire government and legal system are for sale. And our elections are funded and determined by corporations seeking their own ends. But it's all about what I can get, not what I can contribute. There was a very famous and beloved narcissist by the name of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who once said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." Well, admittedly, he did some presidential things for the country, but they changed the residence on Pennsylvania Avenue from, I guess, a White House to a whorehouse in his honor. Just another sterling example of American politics in action. You know, his ilk enshrined on the do as I say, not as I do into the national psyche. JFK's sentiment was genuinely American for the time. But this era has nothing like that except Bungles the Clowns. Come on, man, I'm not kidding. Hey, it's all free. Won't cost a dime. Taglines. It was challenging to transcribe Joey's mumblings, his forgetful ramblings, his gaffes, his delusional reminiscences of corn pop. Fortunately for posterity, we have them all recorded. God knows, I don't want to go back and listen to them. Keep this in mind. War, my friends, is a business. The advocacy feeding the military-industrial congressional complex and funnel money from the people of these corporations who reinvest in more government transformations through the election process. Wash, rinse, repeat. You know, there was a time we pledged our lives to this republic. We pledged our allegiance every morning. I remember pledging my lives to this republic to defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I've never looked back on that pledge. And we went to school and pledged our allegiance every single morning. And yes, even in the military, we did it. Yeah, we promised to protect it from all enemies, foreign and domestic. But we've eliminated those words and phrases. They required our unwelcome participation and involvement. They got in the way. In the course of change and guaranteed improvement. Did you ever wonder about the cadence, the structure, the arrangement of those words? Those three words, foreign and domestic? It is as if the architects of this country knew we would face tribulations from abroad, and still they knew that our most significant trials would come from within our own borders. That we would eventually become adversaries to our own republic. And then, in fact, brother would fight brother. My friends, our history is replete with instances of internal strife. The war of northern aggression was just one significant test we faced. And that struggle set in motion the wave of discontent still facing us. It gave rise to the overt racial and ethnic discord that we endure today. It established the chain of lies, the profitable purpose of mass media to spread them. All of which required us to bastardize education into indoctrination, to rationalize the expedient apartheid, and cause the leadership to weaponize departments to regulate these contrived threats to the republic, all in the holy name of power. And now we're at war. The government we sanctioned to protect us and that we swore to protect, but it cannot protect us from ourselves. Let that sink in for a moment. We're fighting ourselves, people. We've perfected the art of information manipulation, the spin, all for the purpose of softening the lies. And as the saying goes, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine goes down. Hiding the acrid taste of reality. We've reached a point where no amount of spin can polish this turd. The gliding is wearing thin, and verity is beginning to show. Which will it be? Revolution or reset? Do we tear down what is, or patch it as we have in the past? The American Revolutionary War officially began what we would become. The War of Northern Aggression initiated our demise. And everything that followed was part of the reset. And the international strife and the bickering resulting from our not-so-civil war and the implications from the power grab all just salted the wound. Look up, wake up, folks. There's more ways to settle differences than with force, and yet that is our preferred approach. America's fiscal predisposition and predilection. Every once in a while, I trip on a word, right? Sorry about that. predilection toward war as the ultimate solution bears testament. Our initial response is usually military rather than diplomatically. Didn't the clown in residence purport exceptional diplomatic skills? And how did he proceed to use them today in his discussion with Mr. Putin? Oh, my friends, the remaining question is how to proceed. How do we proceed as a people, as a nation? Will it be a new revolution or part of the futile reset process? We've used Einstein's definition of insanity many times. This is another salient example of our inability to admit that our system is corrupted. We seem to require a revolution in our thinking and approach. Einstein also said that we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we use to create them. And yet this is precisely what we do. We borrow money to resolve problems by which have been created by borrowing money to solve problems. And then we ask the creator of the issues and those that profit most from them how to fix the problems they created. And what do? Con us into borrowing more money. Right, look, Obamacare. Object lesson that exemplifies this. Rather than taking the best working solutions from other countries, old Brokeback tasked the U.S. health insurance companies to create a solution. And we wind up with a perfectly typical example of employing faulty thinking to create a defective fix. Welcome to America's modus operandi. And so, my friends, how well is this excellent solution working? Does every American have affordable health insurance? Wasn't that the goal? Did the health insurance companies provide positive results, or did we buy another pig in a poke? Are health insurance costs in or out of control? Come on. You remember on Wednesday, I shared with you a complete printout of what my bill from my hospital would have been at $327,000. My cost was, what, $350,000, $3.25 million, somewhere in that area. Hospital bills as much as they think they can sucker somebody out of. The insurance company comes back and battles and goes back and forth. I like the part where $1,027 got paid to have a couple of people watch over me. To do what? To make sure I didn't pee in my pants or vomit? How ridiculous. How simply ridiculous, people. And yet later this year we face the midterm congressional elections using the exact voting process to replace the people that surreptitiously seated Bungles the Clown. And yet we are expecting ethical and forthright results. You think we're really expecting a difference, a change? We're frickin' insane, people. Absolutely insane. Before I conclude with my final comments, much of what we discussed tonight was to much degree a follow-up to what we presented to you last night. And although we didn't specifically get into discussions about what's going on in Russia, the Ukraine, etc., there's so much intertwined filth and garbage going on with this. So we can sit over here, we can be angry at the Russians for attacking Ukraine, we can, yet all of a sudden we come up with this evidence that Ukraine is housing a whole bunch of Department of Defense things. When do we sit back and mind our own damn business? When do we stay out of the rest of the world's business? What are we doing in 160 other countries? Being the backup local gendarmes, the backup local police? And yet, we've been invaded. I might sit here tonight and talk about how Russia's invaded Ukraine. We've allowed the entirety of South America and Mexico to invade this nation. We're finding more and more proof and facts that we've got Afghans in this country that never should have been allowed to leave Afghanistan after we pulled out of another failed war. And now there's much questions raised about the caliber of many of these people. And they're spreading all over the place. We have allowed to be invaded, not just by illegal invaders, but by people who wish to come here and do us no harm, or no good. I'm sorry. They wish to do us nothing but harm. We've created our own enemies around this world. Do we have friends left? I don't know. We got issues going on with Russia. We got problems over here in China. We got stuff down in North Korea. I don't know. That guy in North Korea, is he dead? Is he alive? I haven't seen pictures of the guy for a while. What was his name? I can't remember. Sung Yat-sen or Ching Hao. It doesn't make any difference what the guy's name is. And he was laughing at us. See, I wonder why. I'm not laughing. I'm not crying yet, but I'm damned angry. And yet the games that we play. Briefly. Kim Jong-un. I know that guy, Kim Jong-un. Yeah, that big laugh. All right, I had a phone conversation with John Kelly a couple of days ago. And found out that one of my email accounts basically was not shut down, but it was problematic. And I wasn't receiving anything, and I didn't realize it. I also couldn't send anything on it, and I didn't realize that either. And it's the one that we've got posted on Dr. Kelly's website and Sierra Madre. It's currently posted on Metropolis Cafe. And I was able to sort all those issues out today. And when I opened it up, I had 300 and some odd emails, people inquiring about gold and silver, people inquiring about Dr. Kelly's enzymes, about his cancer books, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm going to tell each and every one of you, the comments that I receive from listeners in specific who have been drawn to this program, and I'm not going to get into all the reasons for it, all the reasons why. But I want to thank each and every one of you. I have attempted to respond to all of you today. Those who inquired about purchases or inquired about some things on programming, et cetera, et cetera. It has been, in many respects, a more than a mild awakening for me. Secondly, so I want to thank all of you for that. But secondly, as some of you may be aware of, this is probably the first time that I've done four nights in a row on a broadcast in many, many, many months. There were times that I might do one broadcast a week live. We've been doing an awful lot of reruns. Some things within the last couple of days, both from a physical standpoint, meeting with my doctor, but also some of the programming we've done this week. I can only invite each and every one of you to go back, pick up the archives for every single program this week that we've done live, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and tonight, and share those archives. Send it out to people via your emails. Share it with everybody you can, not because it benefits me. You know, the terrible thing is it's never been about that with me. Yeah, so big deal. I peddle the gold and silver, so I peddle a couple of books. It's never been about money with me. It's about reaching out to Americans who get it or may need to get it, who need to understand it. So let's go back to one of our previous comments before I broke with these side things. We're facing midterm congressionals. We're expecting ethical, forthright results, but we are insane. And why? Because we are counting on the same faulty system that handed this country to the Democrat Socialist Party to perform unimpeachably. We're insane. Do you get it? We, the people of this nation, are fully insane, especially if we trust the system and those that run it. Do you get it? If you don't, I don't get it. All I could do is invite you to come to the circus, the greatest show on earth.
Come to the circus, the greatest show on earth. Come to the circus, see the circus. If we're not very careful, life can overwork us. So take today and make it gay, for there are too many tears along the way. So come to the circus, it's circus day today. Come see the barkers and the gawkers, the bareback riders and the fearless tightrope walkers. The funny bears do their routine. The greatest extravaganza the world has ever seen. The big calliope will play, and 50 pack at arms will sway. You see a hawk here dressed in gray, shouting peanuts, popcorn, and lemonade. A human cannonball will zoom, a trumpet flare and bass drum boom. Who entertain your mom and pop? The people under the great big top. If we're not very careful, life can overwork us. So take today and make it gay, for there are too many tears along the way. So come to the circus, it's circus day today. Come see the barkers and the gawkers, the bareback riders and the fearless tightrope walkers. The funny bears do their routine.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast two-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.